This episode is sponsored in part by Sacred, a not-for-profit that helps improve lives in the rural Mexican communities where heritage agave spirits are made. Since we obtained our official not-for-profit status from the IRS back in 2017, Sacred has gifted more than 32,000 Tobola agave seedlings to families in rural Oaxaca. These families are finding their cultural heritage at risk as access to agave is getting harder and harder due to the global explosion of interest in mezcal. Even as we continue to expand this program, we've also recently helped to launch a program that will build out 3 greenhouses in rural Jalisco to help protect 4 at-risk varieties of agave and 3 at-risk varieties of trees, while at the same time preventing these rare wildlands in Jalisco from becoming still more Blue Weber farms. To learn about these and other programs, visit sacred.mx. That's sacred.mx. If you love heritage agave spirits, please consider helping us protect that cultural heritage with a tax-deductible donation this holiday season at sacred.mx. Hey, Chicago, there's a gallery show going on that you won't want to miss. It's called Agave, and it features artwork made primarily from agave fibers left over from mezcaleros in Oaxaca. I say primarily because there's also a musical instrument that looks something like a didgeridoo, but made from the heart and quixote of a madrecuiche. Buy that and record a version of our theme song with it, and we'll feature it on this podcast. Agave will be on display in the Chase Gallery at the Epiphany Center for the Arts from now until April 9th. And every first Thursday, a different agave spirits company will be on hand to sample out some of the liquid agave art that we love so much. For details, visit epiphanyshy.com. That's EPIPHANYCHI.COM. Or follow the link from this episode page at agaveroadtrip.com. Hope to bump into you there. I'm Luke Bank.
I am Chava Periban.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico, and is sometimes recorded in a car in Miami Beach during Art Basel.
Wow, so fancy. What has happened to us?
And today... You know what it is? Yeah, I can tell you what it is.
What?
We got taste, Chava.
Okay, you're going to start this episode that way. That's a terrible way to start it. But you know, like, it's not about... place to start.
You know what's a great place to start is with that microphone closer to your mouth.
Oh, Lord. Okay, yeah. So there's this quote from Picasso, actually, and that's how I'm going to start.
Pablo Picasso?
Yeah.
He was Picasso. Never called an asshole.
No.
No.
What? Why are you saying that?
Yeah, you'll understand when you get older. Keep going.
Anyways, so this kid had this quote that said, good taste is the biggest...
Kid.
Well, he okay, was a whatever, kid sometime. Yeah. He said... good taste is the worst enemy of creativity.
Good taste is the worst enemy of creativity.
Correct.
What does that mean, Chava?
What I think he was trying to suggest is that at his time, and that's not so untrue these times as well, you have a number of people that whose taste regulates an industry. And the art, as many
like
other things.
Like a handful of people become the gatekeepers.
Not. I wouldn't even say gatekeepers. But
they become the people who define what is considered good and what isn't.
Exactly. And their taste is therefore named or called good taste.
That's interesting. Okay. So, you know, I don't know if this is what you mean or not, but my mind immediately goes to both bananas and tequila.
Okay.
Well, so bananas.
Can you unpack that, yeah, please.
Yeah, sure. So bananas, right? Like there are all these different bananas. In fact, one of the things I love doing when I go to visit a palanquero, a tabanero, a vinatero, is I love to ask them about bananas because so often they'll have bananas just growing in their backyard.
Yeah,
they'll tell you like they have a special bean that grows on their land that's the best bean ever, and they have a special banana that grows that's the
or
best
chayote,
banana ever.
Chayote too. But anyway.
Oh, I've never asked about chayote. I'll just start doing that.
Yeah, they're that.
So I'll ask about that and they'll have the best banana and I'll taste these bananas and they're always right. It is always the best banana I've ever had. Okay. And they taste so different. And so my point is when I go to the grocery store, like now finally in the US, I've got 3 choices for bananas. I've got bananas,
Okay. Which is the Cavendish banana that everybody knows is banana now. And then I've got the plantain. And then there's these little red bananas.
Oh, red?
Little red bananas.
How do you call those?
I call them little red bananas. I'm sure they've got a better name than Little Red Banana.
Yeah.
But Little Red Banana suddenly sounds like it should be the name of a band. And we should only be playing on toy instruments. Anyway, so they've got all these different bananas in everywhere else in the world. And we really only have the Cavendish. And I think it's, you know, part of it is because I'm sure of the economics of it. It's probably a very hardy breed. And I'm sure because somebody said it's the best banana, like the people who decide what to import at one point said it's the best banana. But when you taste banana candy and like banana Slurpees, I love banana Slurpees. When you taste all of this stuff that's flavored with artificial banana, it's actually the flavor of a different banana that we no longer have access to.
So are you familiar with Play-Doh, like Play-Doh ideal archetype of things?
I used to play with Play-Doh when I was a kid.
Yeah, right. That's not
a dog. Play-Doh's ideals.
Ideals,
it goes into the cave. Yeah.
So yeah. It's funny because, and we're having all this discussion and we're like, it's going to make sense in a minute. But, it has to make sense
promises,
in a minute.
Promises.
Yeah. So Play-Doh's archetype is there's a dog. Every dog in the planet, it's modeled after ideal dog that exists in the world.
That would
of
be
archetypes.
Jacob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in terms of flavors, when someone says they're writing about the spirit that they tasted, and they say this tastes like strawberry, what is the archetype of that strawberry that they're referring to?
Oh, that is interesting. Is this really where you wanted to go?
Well, yeah. What's the banana? And like, what is the archetypical banana? Is it your Dominico banana from Mexico? Is it your banana, your over-the-top frozen banana from Tokyo? Is it your maybe beautiful, delicious banana from Dominican Republic? What is that archetype banana? And the answer, and I'm going to answer myself. right?
It saves time. It does.
Yeah. I'm not trying to get any answers. From you, I think there's certain industries like the wine and the coffee industry where that is very well established. A number of professionals in those industries, and then we should ask these guys, but I have the suspicion, I might be wrong, that if you ask a wine professional what is the reference they have as banana and a coffee professional the reference they have as banana, they might be different.
But how would they even describe that difference?
I think that it is because they've been educated at responding, saying banana to a certain flavor that comes out of wine or coffee.
That they recognize.
And that it's a common ground of discussion between the industry. So when someone in the industry says banana, there's not all the subjectivity that comes with it. They all understand what banana means in the context of wine or the context of coffee, but the flavor is different.
God, you know, this reminds me of conversations I've had with Jesse Diaz and Aaron Campos over at Dark Matter Coffee, right? Where they like to play with the fermentation of their coffee beans and get kind of crazy with that. And then also aging the beans in different ways and then roasting at different levels. And what they've said to me on multiple occasions is that they like to find these flavors that sometimes people who are traditional coffee roasters will tell them are off flavors. And they would this isn't exactly what you're talking about, but it's in the neighborhood, right?
Yeah, no, it's very close, actually. Yeah. What do you call an off flavor? What do you call a defect or an undesirable flavor, too? And that's part of the common language that these professionals have, where a certain flavor is not accepted in what you call a fortunate wine or a fortunate coffee.
Yeah, like Lalo. Like, I remember doing a tasting with Lalo. I made him so angry. He had poured, like, I don't know, 15 or 16 spirits for myself and my friends at his place. And they were all amazing because everything Lalo does is amazing. But then he poured me a spirit and he gave it to me and I tasted it and I said, oh my God, this is the best thing I've had all day. And it was something that he hadn't made that was given to him that he uses as an example of something that has gone wrong in fermentation. It had that blue cheese taste that is something that I look for when I'm traveling through rural Mexico in agave spirits, like the blue cheese flavor I love.
So and I think a big part of what we're making this episode, because I suggested it, is I've seen a few number of professionals trying to come up with a flavor wheel of mezcal.
Sure.
And Like the last exercise that I saw in that direction was a little bit more interesting than other things that I've seen, because he was trying to refer to a specific region, like specifically to like a flavor wheel of mezcal in Michoacán.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm not that sure about is how useful can this be for mezcal, because you're not having big producers.
What do you mean?
Well, like I think for tequila, it makes a ton of sense, because each producer of tequila is going to make hundreds of thousands of liters.
And
they have very specific controls that they can calibrate in order to get closer to what with certain flavors that are being identified in a wheel and understood to be nice and pretty. In the case of mezcal, like the person doing mezcal in front of the other guy, they're using absolutely crazy different formulations, absolutely different yeasts, absolutely different fermentation time. Like there's
so what you're saying is the range is so broad that it can't be defined by a wheel.
I think it's a disservice. I think that a lot of the reasons why they're trying to use these flavor wheels is to pinpoint how complex agave spirits are. That's part of the mission of trying to put this down, saying like this is as complex as whiskey, as wine, as other stuff.
Yeah, you think that's the mission? Because I'm not confident that it is.
That's what I get impressed. Well, actually, this is what it's being expressed in one of the books that I write about this. But I think if you say or you, I don't know if admit is the right word, but if you sort of say we're gonna talk about flavors, because we need to talk about these things, right? When you're drinking something that, I don't know, like that's what the name of this episode is. Can we talk about flavors?
Is that the name of the episode?
I think so. Yeah, that should be the name of the episode.
It's not going to be, incidentally, because I get to name them. Okay. But anyway, keep going.
So how much does it serve us to talk, to pinpoint the complexity of agave spirits if we get to talk about the flavors?
God, I actually think it kind of does the opposite, that when you start defining it by this flavor wheel, that it reduces.
It flattens it, no?
Yeah. I really do think so. You know, I think a more interesting approach is the one that our friend Rachel Toth takes, where she would go around these communities whenever she buys these agave spirits. She'll go around, she'll spend days in a community. She buys like 5 liters, and then she'll spend the next 5 weeks there, and she'll just be harvesting different plants and drying them to make these little kits, so that when she shares the spirits with her friends, she can say, now smell this and taste this of these different like herbs and some of the water from the community, so that you can get a sense of where these flavors...
Context.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
It gives you a context of that community, and you start recognizing the flavors in the agave spirit from all of the plants in the water in the region.
Yeah, I think
Rachel's so smart.
Well, I think that is what will really expand our understanding of agave spirits, and how that will really enrich the way we think about those flavors, no?
Well, I mean, you're saying flavors, but to me, it sort of moves the conversation away from flavor and moves it toward community, because the flavor is the community.
The flavor is the community. I think I understand what you're saying, but there's a landscape of flavors in the community, and you get to understand this landscape through these kits.
Yeah. Like, to me, that's like...
I love
like,
that stuff so
right?
much.
I mean, I get the flavor wheel in that if what we're trying to do is bring more people to taste these small batch things, reflecting what they do in wine is a good idea, right?
Yeah, but it's almost like when you were doing this, like in middle school... Before you were taught how to...
Middle school when you were drinking wine and using your flavor wheel.
No, but before you were taught how to write a competent essay, they will, or like a more free form of an essay,
yeah.
They will tell you like, read these 5 books and then do an essay that it's based on just the ideas of these 5 books.
Yeah.
And they will try to constrain you in order not to give you a lot of freedom and you to do like a frank instead of an essay. But as we grew older, they would like research this whole area, read as many books as you want, and then free attack this essay. So I think the wheel is sort of a like a middle school.
It's
approach.
Like training wheels.
Yeah.
It's the training flavor wheel from Mezcal. That might be the title.
I love that. I mean, wait. And this is by no means a disrespect. Like, we're not trying to disrespect at all.
No.
I think that is very important to establish too. We just have our doubts of how useful this tool is and if it's really serving the purpose that I think it's trying to serve.
Well, you know, if the purpose is to bring in new consumers, it's going to do that. Because, you know, people who drink fine wines are used to seeing the wheels, and this is how they define what they're drinking. So it actually is useful. In terms of utility for really defining the flavors, maybe not so much.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
I think that's a wrap.
Okay. Hasta pronto, chavos.
Adios. This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Periban. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.